Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Reading Materials Podcast, a podcast where two friends read a book and discuss it on the show. My name is Cori.
And my name is Lucia.
And today we are going to be discussing The Brilliant Death by A.R. Capetta.
Mm-hmm.
But before we do, how are you?
I'm doing all right. We are recording. It is 4 days before Christmas, so we were just having our own little chat about Christmas stress and trying to prepare everything and the never-ending list of things that need to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, dealing with that, but otherwise doing fine.
Good.
How about you?
Yeah, I've just had a huge rant at you about how Christmas it is.
Yeah.
And I have the added stress of having to plan a first birthday this year. We're not doing a party or anything, but it does just feel extra stressful because it's his first birthday and I want it to be special for me, but that's just adding unnecessary stress on myself, so you know.
I get you. Are you doing double presents or how are you handling the situation that it's on the same day?
He is getting, well, we in the UK exchanged gifts for Christmas on the 25th.
Yeah, okay, true.
So we're doing birthday on the 24th and Christmas on the 25th, and we have made sure to wrap birthday presents in birthday wrapping paper and Christmas presents in Christmas wrapping paper. And Edward is not going to know the difference. In fact, he just really likes ripping any kind of wrapping paper at the moment. I must say that wrapping Christmas presents in front of him has been quite a challenge. He's just going to have a lovely time no matter what, and I should just remember that. And yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have a summer birthday party for him in the summer so that he can do nice summery things, because otherwise he'll never be able to have an outdoor birthday party, which will be sad.
Yeah. Cool. Very good.
Yeah. So, shall we discuss this book?
Yeah. Do you have any information on the author?
I certainly do. Not very much. A.R. Capetta lives in Vermont and has a Master of Fine Arts in Writing for Children and Young Adults from Vermont College of Fine Arts. Is married to Corey McCarthy, and they both teach at the Vermont College of Fine Arts. They have been a professional baker in a past life, which I thought was quite interesting. And they've got 8 young adult novels out, including one called The Heartbreak Bakery, which includes recipes within the novel, which I think sounds quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, there's not very much out there. Their pronouns are they, them.
Yep.
I couldn't see much more. There was a Twitter account that is linked on Goodreads. Sorry, X. It's no longer active, so it looks like Twitter has been deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, I didn't really do much research, to be honest.
That's fair enough. Yes, I must say that through a variety of reasons that are entirely my own fault, we are recording this really late compared to when we had planned to, and we have rescheduled it several times as well, so we're having to do this immediately after you have just finished work.
Yes, yeah.
So preparation may be lacking from both of us.
Yeah. And why did you pick this book?
So I was looking for novels with just general queerness in, and this fit the bill.
Yep.
Cool. So there we are. Shall I read you a blurb?
Do it.
Okay, so The Brilliant Death by A.R. Capetta. Quick side note, on Goodreads, it says Amy Rose Capetta, but they no longer publish under that name, and it is now A.R. Capetta.
Okay.
Okay. For Teodora Di Sangro, a mafia don's daughter, family is fate. All her life, Teodora has hidden the fact that she secretly turns her family's enemies into music boxes, mirrors, and other decorative objects. After all, everyone in Vernalia knows that Stregas, wielders of magic, are figures out of fairy tales. Nobody believes they're real. Then the Capo, the land's new ruler, sends poisoned letters to the heads of the five families that have long controlled Vernalia. Four lie dead, and Teo's beloved father is gravely ill. To save him, Teo must travel to the capital as a Disangro son, not merely disguised as a boy, but transformed into one. Enter Cielo, a Strago who can switch back and forth between male and female as effortlessly as turning a page in a book. Teo and Cielo journey together to the capital, and Teo struggles to master her powers and to keep her growing feelings for Cielo locked in her heart. As she falls in love with witty, irascible Cielo, Teo realises how much of life she's missed by hiding her true nature. But she can't forget her mission, and the closer they get to the palace, the more sinister secrets they uncover about what's really going on in their beloved country, and the more determined Teo becomes to save her family at any cost.
Good.
This was published in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So, what did you think?
So, I finished this a few days ago. I think we were going to try and record over the weekend, so I finished it like the day before. But it had taken me a good few weeks to read. I admit I was not blown away. I don't know if it's the same as it was last year, that I'm just kind of reaching burnout in terms of just reading. So it wasn't really grabbing my attention, but I'm hovering at around like 2.5 stars. I thought there were really interesting elements to it, but overall, I don't really see the point of the story at all. So I'm curious to discuss it with you, and I think I'll maybe form a better opinion as we go. But right now, I'm just feeling a little bit underwhelmed with the whole thing. How about you?
So I feel exactly the same as you. I also rated it 2.5 to 3 stars, although interestingly, when I was looking at a synopsis to try and put together a summary of the character names, I was feeling a bit more interested in it than I was when I initially finished it.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that I found quite frustrating about it was that it felt more young than adult,
yep.
If that makes sense.
Yes, yeah.
There were some adult themes in it, like there were some sexual scenes, or light sexual scenes, which maybe wouldn't go into a children's book. But mm-hmm. apart from that, I would say that there wasn't really anything that made it too adult. And it was almost too juvenile in many aspects,
mm-hmm.
whether it was character development or just how non-complex the story was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I completely agree. I think maybe that was my main issue. A lot of things sort of happened without any clear explanation for why they happened and how they happened. There was an issue that a character was having, and then within a few pages it was resolved. I wish that things had been developed a bit more, that we'd maybe gotten more of an exploration of the magic system. Maybe that will happen in the sequel, because I think there is a sequel coming out, but at this point I'm not interested enough to read it.
So the sequel came out in 2020. It's called The Storm of Life. Oh,
well, there you go. But it's already out.
I too am not interested enough to want to go and read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Cool. So do you want to get into the characters then?
Yes, so shall we start with Teodora?
Let's.
So Teo is the second daughter in this family, and she is, I think, the third or fourth child.
Mm-hmm.
Must be fourth, because her mother died giving birth to her, or shortly after her birth. And she's obviously the main character. She is kind of presented as quite a heartless, not quite killer, but she secretly stalks the family's enemies, and the family is a mafia family, and turns them into these objects when they're annoying the family. And it could be something as simple as stealing you know, a small item, or it could be plotting against the father of the family, whose name I don't remember.
Yep.
And she keeps the fact that she's got this magic secret from everybody. She doesn't tell anybody in the family. The story does start with a basic introduction. Is it a prologue? Not where she witnesses a scene where her father kills somebody, which mm-hmm. becomes relevant to the story later. And she is really interested in how the world is ruled and how it's run and the politics, etc. But because she is the fourth child and a daughter, she has no chance of being, let's say, the heir,
mm-hmm.
because she's got two older brothers and an older sister.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, apart from just telling you what happens step by step through the book, I don't really feel like I know much about her
mm-hmm.
to be able to give much character development, apart from what it's worth mentioning. Clearly, she is non-binary, but in this world, they don't have a word for that. So she transforms into a boy at one point and I think displays a very clear preference for being in that form.
Mm-hmm.
But still in her sexual encounters exhibits interest in also having sexual experiences as a girl. So I think that will probably be cleared up in the next book and she will figure out more who she is. But for now, I think just we're introduced to the confusion
mm-hmm.
and the fact that she's very clearly not just a girl.
Mm-hmm.
As it were.
Yeah.
Do you have anything as a sort of summary to add?
Yeah, she has very strong, not like other girls energy, as a lot of main characters in YA fiction do.
Mm-hmm.
She, I don't remember how old she is. I think she's maybe like 15, 16. She's nearing like adulthood. And yeah, she dreams of taking over, I think, the family, because the eldest brother, whose name escapes me, I think is Benissimo or something like that.
Benyamo.
He's a tyrant. Like, he's the world's biggest bully to the extreme. Nobody really likes him. Even the father doesn't really want him to become the head of the family, but because he is the firstborn son, that's kind of what's expected will happen. Then there's Luca,
mm-hmm.
that's the second son, and he is quite quiet, he's studious, he doesn't dream of being the head of the family, he just wants to go and study at university. And then she has one more sister who I think is older, and she's been promised to be married to some boy who is the eldest son of like another prominent family. In any case, so because she is the fourth, as you've said, and she is a girl, it doesn't seem likely that she will ever get into a position of power. But she really looks up to her father, and her father, I wouldn't say indulges her, but as in, he does trust her with a lot of things, and a lot of things related to running the family. So he includes her in all the lessons that he gives to the older boys. And they do have a special relationship. It wasn't really clear to me how much the father knew about what she was doing.
Mm.
Did you think he had any suspicion that she was the one who was getting rid of the enemies?
I didn't read it as that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all a bit unclear to me as well, because I think, did it come out that he was a Strega?
Yes, at the end, yeah.
So, I don't know if he knew that she had magic because he did as well, or if it doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also wasn't quite sure. In any case, she uses her magical ability to turn people into objects, which is a really interesting concept, and I think that was one of the things that I had hoped would be explored more, this whole concept of what it is to be a Strega and how it all works. But we don't really get an explanation, because I think the way that I understood it, it almost seems like each Strega has their own particular power. Her power is that she can change humans into objects, but we meet other Stregas and they do other things. So, yeah, how does that all work? Is it just random, or...?
I don't know, because it also seemed like the system... Like, I'm not sure that the magic was actually anything that they had any kind of control over. Like, it seemed like quite a lot of the time Teo was having a discussion with the magic and, like, asking the magic to do stuff rather than actually having any control over it whatsoever. And Cielo had a book that they turned the pages of and stuff happened. I knew that you would say you wanted to understand it more because I was also like, I don't understand what's happening.
Mm. Yeah, which was a bit frustrating because that was kind of the whole point of the book, apart from like the political intrigue. Which we can get to a bit later. But yeah, that is the first thing that's introduced. She does this in secret. She leads the... It's mostly men, but there are, I think, a few women that she's also changed up like a hill and then changes them into an object. She doesn't, as you say, have any control even over what they're turned into. It just kind of happens. We get the concept of the Brilliant Death, which is also the name of the book. And my understanding was the Brilliant Death is when you kill a Strega and the magic that they had within them is then absorbed by another Strega who is nearby. And this is what she thinks happened to her mother when her mother died, and I think it was during childbirth. But then we find out that the mother's power went to the father, didn't it? Or the mother didn't have any power at all?
Yeah, I think the mother didn't have any power.
It was the father all along.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
And so her power came from the guy that her father kills at the beginning.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So then that means that he would have been the one who was able to change people into objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
The father's ability is that he can heal.
Yes.
He can heal.
He can heal, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, apart from the fact that she's a Strega, we don't really find out much about her in terms of her personality or her interests. She doesn't have any hobbies, seemingly. She doesn't have any friends, seemingly. There's one, there's mention of a girl, but that's more of a romantic interest. We never meet this girl. They just exchange letters.
Mm-hmm.
And then she meets... I really like how you pronounce the name, Cielo. I was just going to call him Cielo, but Cielo, yes.
Well, it's because I listen to an audiobook, so okay. I have that pronunciation in my head.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. Beniamo was the other one. It was like a real lyrical quality to the way the narrator said Beniamo.
Hmm. And I realize now that as I'm talking about Teodora, I mean, I'm referring to her as her. Because that's how she presents at the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
But as you've already mentioned, well, because of the events that happen, Teodora and her older brother, Luca, are traveling to meet the capo, who is the new ruler. Mm. And Luca dies. But the capo is expecting a male heir to arrive. So Teodora desperately wants to be able to... shift into a male form the way that Cielo seems to be able to do so naturally. And yeah, this is where it became frustrating, because for 2 days they're traveling, she doesn't know how to do this, and then suddenly she can.
Yeah.
For seemingly no reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you refer to her as her or...
I think so, and the reason I think I did is because she hadn't yet come up with, like, hadn't yet decided on her pronouns herself.
Mm.
But I don't know what the correct behaviour is.
Yeah, Agreed. I would be inclined to refer to her as her when she's running around as Teodora, and then him when she's running around as pretending to be Luca.
But yeah, although with Cielo, I'm very much more, well, their pronouns are they, because they are interchangeable from the very beginning.
Yeah. So Cielo is the second main character.
Yes.
And they are also a Strega. They show up quite early, and they are the ones who deliver the letter to the father. Seemingly without knowing what's about to happen, but again, I'm not quite sure how much they knew going into this plot. But they become very important because they're the ones who teach Teodora how to shift her body into a male form. Again, this happens very quickly. And they have their own motivation to be with the capo because they want to find out what happened to their mother. But again, like, we don't find out anything about them outside of the fact that they're a Strega. So it's really hard to talk about them as a person.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of mischievous. They have a, you know, a kind of teasing sense of humor. They have a much better grasp of magic than Teodora does at the beginning. They can shift into, like, between male and female forms, but also into animals.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't know. What else would you add about them?
They're the love interest in this, but I honestly couldn't tell you why. The love story, I could have taken or left. It didn't really seem to have much origin or I don't know, like, I wasn't interested in the love story.
It felt like it was trying to be enemies to lovers,
yeah,
but very fast, because they were antagonists at best for a couple of days.
Yes.
And then suddenly were attracted to each other, and then suddenly were exploring their feelings and were seemingly a couple. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know if they really know either, to be honest.
True. Fair. That's fair.
And it also felt a little bit like, oh, here's another person who's openly a Strega. I'm therefore attracted to them. No, I wasn't at all convinced, to be honest. Their kind of whole motivation is they want to know what happened to their mother, who just disappeared. So that's what they're searching for. And I think through them, it turns out that, is it Teo's magic is really strong, because Cielo was in the mountains or on the other side of the mountains or doing something, and was attracted by Teo's magic from really far away. And then they meet, and then this letter gets delivered to Teo's father by Cielo, and they meet again. And at this point, Cielo's in a different, in the other gender. So Teo's not really sure who she's met. What was the point in what I'm saying here? Yeah, I don't really know. Something about the magic being really strong. I think Cielo's magic was really strong as well.
Yes.
Because of what happened to their mother.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, because as we find out, their mother had been working with the capo previously, but had fallen in love with the capo's brother, who is a member of the religious sect that exists in this world, and they are against magic. She was working for the capo, and they were together exploring this idea of the brilliant death and training your magic and absorbing the magic of another Strega. So she had killed and absorbed the magic of many different Stregas before Cielo was born, and then when she died, he inherited all of that power. So I understand why his magic was quite powerful, but again, we didn't really get a demonstration of any other ability apart from the shape-shifting. Whereas Teo, as far as I know, the man whose power she absorbed hadn't absorbed other Strega's power, so she should have... Like, why was her magic so powerful to begin with?
Was it also maybe because she had... She was her father's daughter? I don't know. Yeah, no, I don't know. I was going to say because of what happens later where she kills the other Strega dies in front of her, but she was already powerful before that happened, so...
Yeah, yeah. Again, not very well explained. Maybe explored more in the other book, I don't know, but in this book, no clue. But yeah, how did you like that, the mystery, or like, I guess, Cielo's quest to find out what happened to his mother? Sorry, their mother.
I thought that was really interesting. Actually, I thought that was the most interesting part of the whole book. I wasn't really drawn to any of the rest of it. It felt a bit disjointed. Like, at one point, they're heading over the mountains to go to the capital city, and Cielo has joined Luca and Teo, and everything's fine and dandy. And then suddenly they're on this side quest to go find this guy in a hut who taught Cielo how to be a Strega.
Mm-hmm.
And I the timeline I was a little bit baffled by. Like, there was a lot of kind of hopping from place to place and event to event.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really understand any of that.
Yeah. I think it was just a few days, because I think they were supposed to show up at the Capo's palace within a week. So it must have been less than a week that they were walking from wherever Teo's village was to the capital, trying to escape Benyamo on the way, whom at this point Teo had turned into an owl because he was torturing his brother. Which also, like, super gruesome, but we totally gloss over it. He was literally skinning him alive.
Yeah.
And then within a couple of hours, they're just happily walking through the forest, not sleeping, to try and escape this owl. What? How did that even happen so quickly? I just didn't really understand.
No.
Seemed a bit unrealistic. And then the owl kills the brother. Like, how?
Mm-hmm.
Just with its claws, or...?
I think so. I listened to this part of the book 3 times, and I think it was just through the claws, but... I mean... How is an owl able to do that?
Does he slit Luca's throat? Is that what happens?
I think it is to do with blood loss. Like, there's probably a jugular vein involved, but...
Yeah. I don't know. It felt a bit, again, like rushed and very conveniently happened very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we needed to get rid of Luca because Teo needs to be the one who's the main character and who's going to do everything. But I feel like there was definitely a better way this could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't really seem to impact Teo as much as one would think, considering Luca was her favorite sibling. I mean, she mourns him for a day or two, but then gets very caught up in the political plot, so...
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, that subplot about that guy in the forest. Again, it seemed like we need to leave Luca alone. So, let's go on the side quest to a different part of the forest and leave Luca by himself, even though he's weak and wounded and has no magic. Yeah.
Okay, so we are currently doing our favourite thing of just book bashing.
Yes.
Was there anything about this section before they got to the capital city that you actually liked?
Before they got to the capital city? I'm struggling.
So I thought it was quite interesting that we don't understand how the magic worked, but what Teo is doing is turning people into objects, and the object that they are turned into seems to have some kind of relevance either to what she's thinking at the time, or I'm not entirely sure exactly what it is, but for example, the person that she meets on the mountain turns into a music box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure how, like, maybe she just thinks, oh, that's pretty, but like later on she turns one of the princes or heirs of the five families into a shoe remover because they're always sticking their boot in where it's not required or something. I can't remember the exact wording of the explanation, but there was an explanation of some kind of sort. And I thought that that was quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She accidentally turns Benyamo into an owl
mm-hmm.
when he's torturing Luca. The owl is not supposed to have wings, so that comes as a bit of a surprise, I think, and obviously then causes the issues that Benyamo can follow them around. And I thought that that was quite, yes, plot device-y, but quite an interesting development, just in terms of some of them were just random objects, but some of them were not.
Mm-hmm.
And I quite liked the image of her room just filled and filled yeah. and filled with all of these objects that everybody thinks that she is romancing this person in the other village. And every time she goes there, she comes back with a gift.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's this person that she's turned into something, and her house, her room is full of these objects that are interesting. I really enjoyed that
mm-hmm.
as a mechanic yeah. mechanism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me too, actually. I liked the introduction of Teo's power.
Mm.
But again, I think I would have just liked more of an explanation for exactly what you're saying. Is it random what they're turned into? Does it have something to do with the person that they were before? Or is it what she was feeling or thinking at the time? It's just a bit unclear to me. And that bothers me a bit. Like, it's not really that important, I don't think. But for me as a person, I wish I had understood it a bit more.
Mm.
The one thing I did like, I like Cielo's character. Like, I prefer Cielo to Teo. I think they are just a bit more funny. And I always like it when there's a character with a sense of humor. Teo is very doom and gloom, which, okay, fair enough. Her father is dying and now she has to do this thing. But even before that, she was very much, you know, woe is me. Whereas Cielo somehow managed to keep their wittiness alive, despite the fact that they've also not had an easy life. So I liked the banter when there was banter, I liked.
I agree.
Yeah. So then they get to the capital. So tell us about the capital and why are they there? What do they want to do?
This letter is delivered to the five heads of the five families. And basically, as soon as the letter is opened, four of the heads of the families die. And Teo's father does not die, which we find out later is because of his powers. And then all of the heirs to the families are summoned. And it turns out that it's, spoiler alert, which we haven't done, spoiler alert, it's the capo who's doing it, and he is the kind of ruler, or wants to be the ruler of the family, rather of Vinalia, which I think is the country, rather than being these five families who rule. So he has used one of his Stragers, who he keeps in a dungeon basement, to send these poisoned letters, and is then summoning the heads of the families. There's a wedding involved at some point?
I think there's a ball. I don't think it's necessarily a wedding. I think he's just throwing a ball. Because the way I understood it, he wants them to swear allegiance to him, basically.
Yeah.
And declare him as the ruler of the whole country.
Yeah.
And I think the ball is supposed to mark that occasion.
Mm.
I think. But I could be wrong.
Well, anyway, they've all been summoned. And then there's this other country off in the distance. We'd never really get an explanation about it. And he's also talking to them at the same time and trying to persuade them to lead an invasion in secret so that The heirs of the five families have to unite in order to fight off this threat. So he's trying to engineer this thing to unite all the families while also wooing them. And then he's also, I think, trying to make magic more accepted by putting statues of magical beings in the courtyard / palace. And he has these two pet Stragas who do things for him and are very scary and intimidating and create reasons for people to not pass him. So as soon as they arrive, basically, Teo and Cielo almost sort of separate on their two separate missions. Cielo's trying to find out what happened to his mum, their mum, and Teo is trying to pass off that she is actually Luca, having at this point transformed into a boy, and ingratiate himself into all the family, like in with all the lads.
Mm-hmm.
While also finding an antidote for the poison that is currently killing her father, but hasn't actually told everybody that the father is still alive.
Yeah.
And then this is where, I mean, it gets a bit confusing, because it seems that Luca is, like, jumping... No, not Luca. Luca's dead. Cielo is jumping around, speaking to magic bakers down in the kitchens, or being out and about, doing other things, going and chatting to other Stragas,
mm-hmm.
while Teo is pretending to be a boy
mm-hmm.
and managing.
Mm-hmm.
There's this, like, middle bit, which is a little bit kind of nothing happens, but lots of things happen.
Yeah. My understanding was, again, it's not clear how many days pass, but I think it is, again, just days that they're there. And they spend the nights together in Teo's room because they're saying that Cielo is the servant.
Mm-hmm.
So they meet up at the end of the day, they sleep in the same room, and then they, again, separate in the morning. But Cielo finds the answer to their question very quickly. I mean, they know that they have to speak to the baker or the cook or whoever. Very quickly managed to convince the baker to give them the food, which is magical and will draw out memories. And then I don't know what they're doing. Then they're just kind of walking around the castle, existing, whilst Teo, as you say, has fully transformed into Luca. Everyone accepts that it's now Luca. Even the friend who is the betrothed of Teo's sister. Teo has a bit of a conflict with one of the other boys, Pasquale, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And very openly speaks to the capo. Like, there's not much subterfuge happening. She just walks up to the capo, and the capo, for whatever reason, immediately lets her go down to the basement, to the dungeon, to mm-hmm. see the Straga. She finds out about the brilliant death,
mm-hmm.
and then manages to come up with a plot to kill the capo with the help of the other boys. But then that doesn't work, because it turns out that the guy who's going to marry her sister is betraying them. He's been working with the capo all along.
And the sister has been also betraying them, because she's told her betrothed the father's not dead, so he has all of this background information that he shouldn't have.
Hmm. But do you think she's doing that consciously to betray the family, or because she is blinded by love and just wants to, you know, send a letter with her life updates to her betrothed?
It wasn't very clear to me, to be honest. I wasn't very sure about any of that.
Mm.
Because you're right, there weren't really many consequences of that. It's not like Teo gets back home later and is like, you betrayed us all.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of read it as naivete. Like,
yeah,
I think she didn't fully grasp the severity of the situation and just wrote whatever in the letter. I didn't think she thought about it too hard.
Yeah.
It was just unfortunate then that the guy she was writing to turned out to be the betrayer. So,
yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the capo's plan, I didn't understand it.
So I read it as he was trying to become the leader by uniting the five families rather than them all working towards their own means. And he was never going to get the old guard to agree to that. So that's why he killed all the five leaders of the family and then got the heirs to come to the capital to try and then be able to sort of bend them to his will by fooling them into uniting against this common enemy, which was this other country that he is trying to encourage to invade. So that's kind of what I thought the plan was. He has magic in Vinalia is like mythical. People don't really believe that it exists because the people who have it, the Stregi, they're secretive about it because it's, I don't know if it's forbidden or I don't know why they don't want people to know. So ordinary people don't know that it exists. And he has got these people who, they're very strong Stregi. I don't know what the plural of it is. He's been using them and the Brilliant Death to gain his power. And that's actually what happened to Cielo's mother, is that she was a Strega who the capo had been using to kill other Stregas and then get their power through the Brilliant Death. And then it all kind of backfired when Cielo got her powers instead, because she died after having run away without him having any control over it. So then he gets another two, who I believe are sisters, and one of them is the one who is killing all the others. And the other one is the one who her breath kills.
Yeah.
So all the Stregas are disappearing. And obviously they know that that's happening because they are Strega, and it's not clear to the people of the land because they don't believe in them. So that's all very confusing. And it's because the capo is capturing the Stregas who do come out, or who are out, and killing them in order to pass their powers on to his Strega. So basically, he's going for total world domination by being the most devious, the most accepted politically, and also the strongest in terms of his magic or access to magic.
Right, okay.
Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, I guess. Just wondering why it's all necessary to be done that way.
I think that it's all set up for the next book, to be honest.
Probably, yeah.
Because by the end, do you want to talk about what happens towards the end?
Yeah, so in my opinion, nothing really gets resolved, which is also frustrating. But basically at this ball that the capo has organized, that is when Teo wants to strike and kill him. She's managed to convince all the other boys, except for Pasquale, whom she's turned into a shoehorn at this point, to take part in this plot. And she goes down to the basement, to the dungeon, manages to speak to one of the sisters, the one whose breath is poison. In so doing, is poisoned by the breath. And how does she get out of it? Oh, the other sister comes down and saves her. Because it's confusing because we don't remember their names. But the one whose name begins with a D, with the poison breath, doesn't actually want Taylor to die. So it turns out that the antidote is her blood. So she gives some of her blood to Teo. Teo manages to recover. And important side note, Cielo does like a reversal spell because Teo had accidentally turned the betrayer's heart into wood thereby killing him, asks Chela to reverse it, but Chela manages to reverse all of her magic that had turned everyone into an object. And then she goes to confront the capo that she knows about the plot. The capo kills the girl with the poison breath, uses her blood, gives it to Teo to take home to her father. And now you have to remind me why he's letting her do all this.
Because she has agreed to become his pet Strega.
His new pet Strega.
Yes, and I don't know why she agrees to that. Maybe in order to survive, because there's this big showdown where he's got the two of them, the girl with the poison breath and her, Deo, in this courtyard. It's either kill or be killed, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so she gets the antidote, she grabs Chelo, and they run away. And they run all the way home, manage to get there somehow, very fast. Don't they teleport at some point?
I don't know. I got really baffled at this point because, obviously, because this reversal spell has happened, Benyamo is now no longer an owl.
Yes.
And so there's this bit where they're like going through the woods and attacking Benyamo. Or getting attacked by Benyamo.
Yes, and because Teo has absorbed that other Strega's power, now her magic is completely out of control. She can't focus it, so even though she asks for Benyamo to be turned into something, he's not turned into anything, but everything around him is turned, which is a problem. In any case, they manage to get to her house. She gives the antidote to the father. Nobody questions where she got it from. They have a happy family dinner. They sort of mourn the fact that Luca is dead, but again, they seem to move past it very quickly. And then the sister Strega arrives, and she's attacking the castle, basically bringing it down brick by brick. Teo goes outside. She manages to do some magic that swallows the other Strega into the earth, thereby killing her, so now she's absorbed that Strega's magic as well. And yeah, we get the revelation that her father was the Strega in the family all along. And then how does it end?
I don't really remember. She has to go back to the capital because she's agreed to lead this army, right?
Yes.
And Chielo comes back at some point as well.
Yes.
I honestly can't remember how it ends.
I sort of get the feeling there's something about them setting out to find all the other Strega and maybe band them together against the capo. Maybe. I don't know. I might be making that up.
I don't remember. Honestly, by the end, I was just quite relieved to be finished.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. To be perfectly honest, so was I.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, Benyamo is somewhere. Don't know where.
I thought Benyamo died.
Did he? How?
Maybe not. I thought that... I don't know.
And again, like, all the people that she turned into magical into objects that had been sitting in her room were all just there waiting for her when she got home.
Looking at her sus.
But they didn't do anything. They didn't attack her in any way. They were all just kind of there. And then they all left. So again, like, no consequences for her actions whatsoever. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I might bring that down to a 2, actually, now that we've talked about it. It hasn't made me feel any better about it at all.
Is there anything that you did like that we've not bashed?
I mean, I liked the gender fluidity. I liked that. I thought it was well done. I liked that, you know, nobody was really questioning it. There was some, like, homophobia from Pasquale, but that seemed like a Pasquale problem, not like a general world problem. Mm-hmm. So... I like that element, the fact that both Chelo and Teo were very comfortable, you know, moving between female and male. You know, the attraction wasn't necessarily fully physical. It didn't really matter what form they were in when they were together. So I like that element of it. I did question, though, if all Strega can do that, or if this was, again, just a Cielo and Teo thing. I don't know, but
not sure.
Doesn't really matter. So I think that was the thing that I liked the most about the whole book.
Yeah. Is there anything I really liked how it was just part of the story. It wasn't it wasn't the main focus. I do wish that we'd had more, because I think that Teo figuring out their gender would be a nice resolution.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like that it wasn't like a main element of the story, so I can't really be pleased here.
Oh, and wasn't there something at the end? Teo goes to talk to the father and reveals that she can change into a boy. And there was some conversation about whether or not this means that she can become the new head of the family.
I think that her father was then in favor of her just pretending to be Luca all the time.
Yeah, but she didn't want that. Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't want to lose her identity.
Exactly, yeah. So there was that brief conversation, and it kind of brought in the whole, well, while she was in her male form, the father seemed to be even more accepting of her and more loving.
Yes, there was definitely an element of that.
Yeah. Why don't you just stay this way? It'll make all of our lives easier if you're just a boy, full time.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's, I think that's the end of the book. Oh, and we find out that her older sister is pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
With the betrayer's baby.
Yeah, the baby. Yeah! So, I'm going to say that this is probably the worst one all year.
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
And I don't think it's a bad book. I just think that we are completely the wrong audience for it. And it's aiming at a genre that we have read a lot of,
mm-hmm.
as mature-ish women. You know, we can't really pretend that we're young adults anymore. And I think that we're just younger than the target demographic.
You mean older than the target demographic?
The target demographic is younger than we are.
Yes. Yeah. I think I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it had potential, and maybe if it had been written more for a more adult audience, maybe the author would have developed some of the themes more. I don't know. But like I said, if they're developed in the second book, I'm not going to read it, so I will never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame. I was looking forward to it. The blurb made it sound really interesting, as the blurb always does.
Yeah.
But execution, not quite for me.
Yeah, same.
Oh, well. Better luck next time.
Yeah, exactly. So, would you like to introduce what we are reading next time?
Yes, if I'm not mistaken, we are reading Together We Burn by Isabella Ibáñez.
We are.
I hope that's how you pronounce the author's name. And I picked that book.
Mm-hmm.
And we will discuss next time why that was. It's also, I think, YA fantasy. So we'll see if it's more in the Y or the A.
Yeah.
cool. But yeah, that's what we'll be doing next time.
Beautiful. I look forward to it. I'm sorry this one was a bit of a dud, but it's got to happen sometimes, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It happens. So, no problem. Cool. So I look forward to talking to you next time then.
Yeah, chat to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to know more about us and the podcast, visit our website at readingmaterialspodcast.com. We also publish additional content, including blog posts around the world of books and our thoughts on the topic. If you'd like to get in touch, email us at reading.materials.podcast@gmail.com or find us on Instagram @readingmaterialspod. Until next time, keep reading.